Hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hello again.
Hello again.
What is this? What are we doing here?
We are doing a podcast.
All right.
Yep, and our podcast.
Is it a juicy podcast?
Oh, it's the juiciest, just the juiciest bits.
The juiciest bits podcast. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Yep.
No longer a juicy bit podcast.
No, the not juiciest, just any juicy bit.
And plural, even.
Yeah.
And we are your tour guides and hosts.
Yes, indeed. I'm Mandy.
I'm Charlie. And we're on a highway somewhere or nowhere. Because isn't the journey more important than the destination?
Truly, that's what I've always heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would actually say that the destination is the nemesis of the journey.
Yeah.
Because you go on a trip to avoid arriving at a destination.
That's true, because right? That means you have to turn around and go home.
Well, I was going to say, the trip is like once you're there, the journey's done.
Yeah.
So that's boring.
Yeah.
So the trip is an elaborate maneuver to keep you getting where you're going.
Ooh.
Right? That's just logic.
It's your special logic.
So what are we actually doing? We're axle deep in road movies.
Ooh, axle deep.
I don't actually know what an axle is. I just know that's a car thing.
It makes the wheels turn.
All right, okay. Perfect. We're that deep in road movies.
Very good.
Since we started off with A Green Knight last time.
Indeed.
And now we're doing Thelma and Louise.
Yes, we are.
Without going into too much detail or spoiling our conversation down yonder, does Thelma and Louise change your perspective on road movies at all? So like, what general things do you think it brings to our theme overall? And in light of that, do you want to add anything to our random set of definitions from last time?
Mm. Well, I don't remember our random set of definitions from last time. But
something about a quest, something about wandering around, something about a weird sidekick.
Road
kick,
is necessary.
Exactly, yeah. Road is necessary for road movies.
I mean, it definitely has all of those. I think it also includes an element of escape. I mean, literal escape and figurative escape.
Sure.
Because, well, I won't ruin anything for our conversation later, but yeah, they don't have a plan for going home. They never have a plan for going home. Really.
Yeah. It's only the journey out.
Yeah. Yeah. And a specific journey, but a specific journey that's not necessarily, the details of which are not all shared with the audience, which I think is great.
And the journey changes fundamentally midway through.
Yes. Yeah.
So the journey starts out as one thing and then becomes something very different, with a whole new set of goals, a whole new, like, series of challenges.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the journey and all of its changes is based on what's best for our two explorers. What's best in any given moment.
Yeah.
Not even like from the beginning, but like as they're going.
Right.
They make those changes along the way.
Okay, so it's a much more immediate rather than like even long-term planning of like, oh, this will get us to our destination. It's more like, what will get us out of this moment?
Yeah, and we kind of see that from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't seem like they've been planning it for a long time. Or at least Thelma hasn't been.
Yeah.
I
mean, neither of them, because they, like, pack right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and it's just kind of a spur-of-the-moment
decision
based on, you know, her day.
Access to a cabin that happened. Yeah,
an access to a cabin. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think this is the first, like, this got me thinking about journey as, yeah, escape for sure, but also as bounded, so kind of the opposite of that, where in a certain light, all of these choices look like sort of ways in which they're actually also, like, prevented from making choices. And the freedom that they keep pursuing turns out to be actually just sort of like them getting sort of like a narrower and narrower path. So they just sort of like seem like they have sort of like the open road, and then all of a sudden it just sort of keeps narrowing in on them.
Oh yeah.
And so the
end, they're not even on a road, really.
Yeah. So they're like more imprisoned by by this sort of like escape than they are like, you know, freed by it.
Right. It's sort of like the decision when they have no choice left. Yeah.
Yeah, like the choices are made for, like, someone else is actually guiding them.
Yeah. Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel, as he is for all of us.
And Stephen Tobolowsky.
Man, that guy is everywhere.
He is, and I'm so used to seeing him now as, like, some sort of oddball.
And he's always wearing a bow tie, but he wasn't in this movie, I don't think.
No, this was his most serious movie, I think.
His most serious movie?
Maybe.
All right, yeah.
Because he's usually just such a weirdo.
Yeah.
In the best possible way.
No shade, Stephen. No shade.
No, we love you.
I most recently saw him in a movie called Sneakers, which is a hilarious movie in itself. It's very fun. It's a good romp. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. It's about this group of hackers led by elderly Robert Redford, who was originally a computer genius, and now he leads an all-star cast of folks, including a very young River Phoenix, R.I.P. It's an amazing movie. It's very fun. Title is very weird. Sneakers meaning sneaky, not as in the shoes.
Right, yes. Yeah.
They also have a moment where they talk about a scrunchie, and they laugh at it and make it seem like they don't know what that word is, but it's like actually a real word to describe a real thing.
Yeah.
So lots of confusion around terminology in that movie in general. Anyways, I digress. Stephen Tobolowsky's character is like universally laughed at because he's doing a newfangled thing called computer dating. And he's like a dweeby like computer scientist or something.
Oh, I do.
And he's trying to find chicks online.
Oh.
And they're like, ah, what a loser. Anyway.
I must see it.
Yeah, it's great. Okay, so what's your history with Thelma and Louise? And was this watch at all surprising or different for you? Because okay, so as I was texting you before.
Yeah.
Thelma and Louise lives in my brain as a fun, like, romp, like a buddy comedy.
Yes.
So whenever I think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, that joyful celebration of life and, you know, like gay friendship between two women.
Yeah.
and they just happen to become madcap outlaws, whatever. But that's like not the case at all.
No.
It's such a bummer.
It's such a bummer. Yeah. So I had seen it once before, like years ago, and I didn't really, like, I remembered what happened, but I also thought it was a bit more of a romp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because of, I mean, as you recently found out, the trailer is cut to make the movie seem like a comedy.
The trailer is like a masterclass in like false advertising.
Yes.
It is nuts.
It is nuts. It's absolutely bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
Look up the trailer and you will swear it's a comedy.
I mean, yeah, I would say watch the movie first.
Uh-huh.
Literally, like, let the credits roll on the movie and then immediately go and watch the trailer. It is like the closest I can describe it is like watching, like, you know how there was like those recut trailers that made like The Shining look like a family sitcom?
Yeah.
It's like that level.
Like that. That's what I thought of too.
Yeah. I was like, this can't be, but it was the original trailer.
Yeah.
This was the original, like, yeah.
Which is also like, it just kind of makes me think, like, did the movie start out wanting to be a comedy? Did they want it to be a comedy? And
or
then
did they not trust that it could, like, would draw audiences? But then, like,
I mean, that's a good question too. Like, will this movie about two women on the run
who end up dying,
yeah, bring in audiences?
Yeah.
Or is it better to make it look like a girl trip rom-com kind of thing?
Well, and this is what I also wondered about with like the final moments after the credits roll, because I feel like the movie itself tries to retcon like the tone a little bit, because so we've just seen our hero zoom off the edge of the like cliff, and then we're treated to this like eulogizing montage of their latest, goofiest moments. And it's just like five quick shots or something, which is like all the lightness of this like 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
It's literally like distilling like, yeah, like the lightest moments into this like final little parting PowerPoint for us.
Yeah.
And it's just such a weird juxtaposition to like end on. And it softens that really powerful final shot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just was very confused by that. And then having the trailer also bookend it is like this very weird tonal shift.
Mm-hmm.
So, not sure what to do with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the way the final shots are lit, right? Like, they're zooming off the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
They have decided that there's no going back. The only way out is death.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's such a victorious moment. They're holding each other's hands and they're, you know, stepping on the gas and whooping it up.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we get those sort of goofy moments, the handful of goofy moments in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the movie isn't sure. Like, the movie's kind of like, it's not that sad. It's not that sad. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Like, they're happy now.
They're in a better place together. See, look.
Yeah. At the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Yeah. It's very strange.
It's very strange. And it is so jarring. And in conclusion, I would like to not be blamed for the fact that my brain changed this movie, because everything else also wanted to change this movie in
everything,
my brain for me.
Everything
was conspired against.
All of the signals. Yeah. It's like the aesthetics of the movie did not match. Do not match the subject.
Culturally, this movie. Yeah. The presence that this movie has in culture is so different from what it is itself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally.
Oh, so weird. Well, okay. So, you know, it's our favorite time.
Yay.
Describe this movie in 4 keywords or less.
Okay. So, a lot of words came to mind.
Oh, really? Almost no words came to mind for me.
Well, a lot of, well, okay. So, at first I thought of mom jeans, but then I thought, no, Charlie will make
two words
because it's two words. So, I mean,
you're not going to hyphenate mom jeans. Come
no,
on.
I'm not. I won't. I chose another one.
Good.
So, misogyny, definitely, violence in many forms, naivete, because it's almost irritating how naive Thelma is.
Oh my god, I could just like, ugh, yeah.
Yeah, and hair.
Oh my god, mine are really close. Okay, so mine are death.
Yep, yep.
Nihilism.
Uh-huh.
Imprisonment.
Yep.
Hats. Yeah.
You're witnessing a true friendship here, folks.
Oh, that was amazing. Loved it. Okay, may I do a summary?
Please.
Okay, all right. So, here we go. Buckle up, folks. As we open with a wide, empty desert view, the credits tell us that Ridley Scott directed this movie and Hans Zimmer scored it. Yeah, shocker. We're like, wow, those are some big serious dudes who seem to only do big serious dude movies. What are they doing in this gal pal romp? Well, time will tell whether this is a serious dude movie in a gal pal romp's clothing.
Ooh.
We'll see. Cut to a bustling diner where Louise, Susan Sarandon, is serving smoking teenagers breakfast. What a time the past was.
It's wild.
What a time. Ugh. And telling them that they'll ruin their sex drive with all those cigarettes and pancakes. And then she promptly goes back to the kitchen and lights up while calling Thelma, who is an adorable daffy housewife, telling her to get packing for their weekend getaway trip. They're going fishing at a cabin somewhere. We don't know the details because they become extremely irrelevant, like, almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Thelma is scared to ask her dirtbag husband if she can go away, so she decides to just, like, not tell him. So after he leaves for work at his very important job as regional manager of carpets. We get a fun packing montage where both Thelma and Louise individually reveal their personality through their packing choices. They then hit the road, but because Thelma has literally never been outside the house without her husband before, she begs Louise to stop off at a random roadside bar, roadhouse, connection, full circle moment, for some mid-trip drinks. She then gets friendly and flirty with a dude who has creep written all over him. And Louise is like, girl, cool it. And Thumb is like, bitch, let me have fun for once. But then things get terrible very fast. In true creep form, the creep assaults Thelma. And it's like a very, very upsetting scene. It's mm-hmm. super fucked. But then Louise shows up and points a gun at him, forcing him to let Thelma go. But then he continues to be an abusive fuck, even with the gun pointed at him, and Louise loses it and shoots him dead. Then a very stressed Louise bundles a very traumatized Thelma into their car and drives away, trying to figure out what to do next. Thelma is all for going to the police and just explaining how it was self-defense, but Louise is like, nah, like, literally the world doesn't work like that. Everyone's going to blame you for getting raped and me for doing a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, back at the Roadhouse, Harvey Keitel, aka Hal, is on the case. He's already identified Thelma and Louise as likely suspects, so he goes to his bosses and loops in the FBI, and the laziest manhunt ever kicks off. They spend most of their time just, like, sitting around, mm-hmm. waiting for something to happen, which I guess is, like, actual work.
And but also being like, women can't do these crimes.
Surely not. Yeah. We've never seen the like before. Meanwhile, Louise has decided that she needs to get down to Mexico to hide out for a while, so calls her erstwhile lover Jimmy to send her all her life savings. Around the same time, Thelma literally stumbles over a radiant baby Brad Pitt, who is going by the not at all suspicious name of JD, which, girls, that's not his name. Don't believe anything he says. 100%. Come on.
Yeah, no.
Anywho, JD politely asks for a ride wherever they're going, and classic Thelma is like, yes, please, and classic Louise is like, no way, Jose. So they drive off and leave him, but then after going a little further down the road, they see him again, lounging on the side of the road?
Yeah, it's weird.
And it's starting to feel a little bit like a touched by an angel moment, so this time Louise relents, and they pick up just a handsome boy with a real name, JD. Then then they all spend the drive to Oklahoma City talking about what an asshole Thelma's husband is and how young they were when they first got together, and we do the math and realize they were 14 when they started dating and have been together ever since, which that's a yikes.
That is a
red flag.
Yeah. Explore your horizons, kids.
You are such a child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, we don't need to delve into that.
No,
but
we all know it's true.
When they get to Oklahoma City, they send JD on his way, and it turns out that erstwhile Jimmy has come in person. He decided to bring Louise's money firsthand so that he can convince her not to run away and instead marry him, which is a very weird turn of events. And she's like, maybe not. So they end up spending a long night talking about their failed relationship instead. On a side note, did you know that Michael Madsen is a perfect anagram for Mads Mikkelsen?
You just want to include Mads Mikkelsen in anything and everything.
Maybe. Just don't try and fact check me on this one. Yeah. I'm sure it's fine. Meanwhile, JD has come sniffing around Thelma's room at the motel, and after telling Thelma that he's actually a small-time crook, they go to Bone Town. Next morning, Jimmy leaves, and Thelma meets up with Louise at the motel diner to show her all of the hickeys she got from JD, leaving JD alone in her room with Louise's entire life savings. To literally no one but Thelma's surprise, JD then disappears along with all the cash, and Louise is devastated. And, like, okay.
Yeah.
Fair girl.
That was a hard,
oh my god, scene to watch. Here, poor Louise is, on the run from the law, helping her friend, who she's in this mess because of.
Yeah.
And she's also her only accomplice. And this fucking woman can't be trusted to keep a single damn thought in her head.
Yeah.
Like, a single thought. Thelma is like a chaos baby with no thoughts, just vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just
vibes. Perfect.
She's fully, Thelma, like, and even later on, I mean, spoiler, but, like, later on, even when she's sort of, like, there's a bit more of a, like, equal footing, she's still just, like, pure id, responding to everything, just, like, yeah, it's wild. Yeah. Anyways, But then there's a twist. So all of a sudden, a little bit of a role reversal. So Thelma, like, out of nowhere, sort of becomes very matter of fact and, like, takes charge a bit. Mm-hmm. Bossing a distraught Louise into the car, which, again, it's like, oh, read the room, girl. This is your... She takes them to the middle of nowhere to a small town convenience store, which she then holds up using the exact script that JD told her about the previous night. It's like this bizarre blend of courtesy and menace. And then Louise and Thelma are back on track, once again heading out for Mexico. Meanwhile, Hal and his FBI buddies have camped out with Daryl, that's Thelma's dirtbag husband, in his living room, waiting for Thelma to call home so they can track her. And at some point in there, Hal also arrests JD. And while I do hate police brutality, it is extremely satisfying to see Harvey Keitel beat up baby Brad Pitt with his own cowboy hat.
That is true.
A presumably broken man, JD then tells Hal that Thelma and Louise are heading for Mexico as their ultimate goal. Meanwhile, Thelma and Louise get in more trouble when they're pulled over by a highway cop, and then just, like, handily get out of it by locking him in his own trunk at gunpoint.
That's what I do.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
This is the way to handle cops. At this point, fully hardened criminals with a diverse CV killed a rapist, robbed a small business, imprisoned a cop. They encounter a gross trucker dude who has crossed their paths a few times before and then proceed to blow up his tanker. This
tough
moment,
but fair.
I mean, yeah. I'm divided on this. This moment of female empowerment is undercut by the fact that the feds were apparently on the lookout for big explosions. So women are on the run, and they're like, ah, yes.
It's a clue.
A truck is bound to explode now. I don't understand. Anyway, so they very quickly pinpoint where our heroes are through this explosion, I think, and then all of them converge on them at once. There's a final car chase through the desert, and it seems like Thelma and Louise might get away, but then they all get pinned down between a wall of guns and the Grand Canyon. So between the two, they decide to go out on their own terms and drive the car over the edge. And the final shot is a suspended moment as the car hovers in the air beyond the cliff, right as it slightly points downward.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Very well done.
Oh, thank you. And then, Woo. Like we mentioned earlier, there's this, like credit scene, like, weird upbeat montage of Thelma and Louise's greatest hits on the road.
Yeah.
You know, the, like, 4 or 5 times that they smiled at each other through the entire 2-hour runtime. So, yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I want to talk about how female empowerment is depressing.
Yeah. Well, and kind of to dovetail with that, how men are depicted as such babies.
Oh yeah.
In this movie.
There is not a single good man in this entire movie.
Yeah, and so I think all of the empowerment that we see is a direct result of all the shittiest men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're empowered, like we're cheering for these women who shouldn't have had to be in that position in the mm-hmm. first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so you're a woman.
I am.
Good. Okay. What do you feel about this movie? Like, do you feel like empowered or seen or legit? Like what's the emotional response for you in this?
I mean, the thing that I came away with was just being reminded how terrible things were. You know, it's not like things are all fixed now, but it's, I mean, looking at the way Thelma has to coddle her husband.
Yeah.
Or the way that they address rape culture, right? Like, mm-hmm. we can't go to the police because they'll assume that, like, at one point, Louise tells Thelma, people saw you dancing cheek to cheek with him.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to believe you.
Yeah.
And that,
like, we have a whole room full of witnesses that are against you, essentially.
And that rings true.
Yeah.
But it's still just like, so their only option is to drive to Mexico, but not through Texas. And that part really intrigues me,
uh-huh.
because Louise has this backstory of when she was in Texas And we kind of get the idea that she had been assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I really appreciated about this movie is that they don't go into it
mm-hmm.
for, you know, empathy for Louise. They kind of let her keep that. She yeah. doesn't even tell Thelma.
Yeah.
She just says, I can't, I'm not going through Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out she's wanted in Texas,
mm-hmm.
Presumably for whatever she did to her rapist. So yeah. she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But from like the Oklahoma panhandle, they cannot go through Texas to get to Mexico, which means driving all the way around Texas, mm-hmm. which is how they end up at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess to get back to your question, I was mostly just so irate about how particularly the character of Daryl kind of pushes,
mm.
you know, and how, but at the same time, how Harvey Keitel's character kind of says, oh, they're just women, you know?
Yeah, I have a lot to say about the Harvey Keitel character. Mm-hmm. Like, he is sort of presented as, like, the one decent man, kind of.
Yeah.
But then he, it's like, it's all fake because he's like their nemesis, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird that he's sort of like, the most upstanding gentleman, mm. whatever, who's just trying to do right by them. But he's the one that's instigating this chase.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I can see why. I mean, this movie was apparently revolutionary for many, many folks to the point where they actually recently, 2019, a documentary was made about it.
Oh.
Called Catching Sight of Thelma and Louise. And it's about people whose lives they say have changed as a result of seeing this movie.
Holy shit.
So it is sort of this cultural zeitgeist, and people look at it in terms of women's empowerment and feminism.
Yeah.
But I'm also struck that this movie that Ridley Scott directed, to me, doesn't have nearly as much heavy air quotes female empowerment as like Alien does, right? If you want to look at a Ridley Scott movie with a badass woman in it, yeah. watch Alien.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Aliens. Anything else with Sigourney Weaver?
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, that's exactly what I was wanting to get to, is that, like, I mean, this doesn't reflect my experience in any way, but it is so weird to me to see this movie sort of being touted as, like, a feminist movie when these women are so siloed
mm-hmm.
and they're so lonely and they're sort of like kept that way even as they become sort of codependent on each other.
Yeah, and their only way out is death.
Like, who the fuck wants that empowerment?
That's not empowering.
and all of these sort of like fake choices, like they're only in this situation because they have literally nowhere else to turn. Where it's like, you know, like, every woman I know has, like, 17 other women that they would be like, we will die for you.
Yeah.
So, like, where are their other gal pals that are like, oh, yes, come over to my house. We're going to figure this out. We're going to write letters to our senator. We're going to, you know,
mm-hmm.
this is going to be a thing that we're going to make our mission.
Yeah.
Like, women love a mission. Give them a mission. So, like, it also felt very odd to me that, okay, and this is what I was wanting to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, looping back to the whole big dude movie thing,
mm-hmm.
in many ways, this feels like a gender-swapped Man on the Run movie.
Yeah.
But just with women. Yeah. So it's sort
who
of like
at the, end?
The ice. And who kissed at the end? I mean, obviously the men kiss at the end too. Everyone is gay. but there is no sense of like socialization or wider community or
yeah, none.
Like, they are so isolationist,
mm-hmm.
even though in the beginning we see like Louise sort of like palling around with her coworkers. So it is just sort of like showing how fragile these women are, even in their own social circles. Like, they are surrounded by men and no other women.
Yeah. Well, and even with each other, right? Like, more times than not, Louise is literally taking care of Thelma.
Yeah.
And Thelma just keeps, you know, like, stabbing her in the back just by being stupid.
Yeah.
Right? Like so there are stupid. So many instances where Thelma just makes me cringe because
oh, she makes me so angry.
She's so selfish and so sort of fly by the seat of her pants, and Louise has had to be so careful and so planned and so composed,
mm-hmm.
and you know, has to think 10 steps ahead, that the one time she loses it and shoots Harlan
mm-hmm.
at the bar is
the time that her life is destroyed, essentially.
Yeah, and it's not, she did not want to go to that bar.
No.
And she was sitting there, like, the scene almost made me laugh when she's sitting by herself, kind of nursing her margarita,
mm-hmm.
watching her younger friend, like, dance and have a great time. Like, that was me.
Oh, nobody! Oh, no.
I mean, it was my choice as well. Like, I was fine because I don't,
mm-hmm.
I don't like going out.
You hate fun things.
I hate the bar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was the purse holder and I was fine with that. But mm-hmm. I remember being so frustrated
mm-hmm.
when it's like, I want to go home. Like, can we please now do something I want to do?
This is stretchy pants time now. Yeah.
And it's just like, if you don't want to, you know, fuck around and find out, then
mm-hmm.
too bad. You know, like, it just seemed so... There were so many times where I felt bad for Louise because it almost seemed like she's Thelma's friend because she knows Thelma needs a friend.
Yeah.
But really, she's also kind of Thelma's mom, or at least big sister.
I mean, judging by, like, throwaway comments that are sort of scattered throughout, like, it does seem like they have been friends their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it does also seem like maybe like a childhood friend and they now have very different lot, you know, that sort of thing. And it's like a reconnection moment.
Yeah, because I keep coming back to like Thelma doesn't know what happened to her in Texas.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing.
And she doesn't know what's going on with her and her like ex-boyfriend, Jimmy. Like
even these are things you tell your closest friend before you tell it. Other people.
Louise seems to have no one else in her life except for Jimmy. So, like, who else would, like, and Thelma.
Yeah, and Thelma can not take care of Louise in the same way.
Oh, no. 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 Thelma is the one that, like, essentially, like, drives them over the edge.
Yeah.
Like, literally, is, I mean, Louise is the one driving the car, but Thelma's the one who's, like, there's, like, a certain point where she's, like, oh, like, crime is who I am now, and then is just, like, fully enmeshed in it, and keeps saying things like, I can't go back. Like, this is my, like, this, like I'm on this path now forever.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, one of the reasons she decides to stay with Louise
mm-hmm.
before, you know, the robbery and stuff, I think is because if she were to go back home without Louise, she wouldn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything she does seems to be some sort of effort to be like Louise
mm-hmm.
or to be what she thinks is a good woman, and the only good woman she knows is Louise
mm-hmm.
So even when she's, you know, trying to be a wife to Daryl, she's just kind of going through the motions. Like, at one point when we first meet them, he wants her to put on a bracelet for him, like onto him, and she's trying to do it up, and she's, you know, she's trying to serve him food and he won't let her, even though he expects it. And she just keeps trying one thing after another to try to make him, be nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't be nice to her. And so it's only after she talks to Louise that she's like, yeah, I'm going to go and I'm not even going to ask his permission,
mm-hmm.
which is again, like, you don't need to ask his permission.
Yeah, like, I mean, communication is great, but you don't need to ask his permission.
Yeah, you don't need to ask his permission. And, like, the joke that she left something in the microwave for him to heat up, like, I mean, it seems funny, especially since she left the microwave wide open.
Wide open?
But it's...
And the light on? That light's gonna burn out. It's also like,
you don't need to... Like, surely he can make a hot dog
or
order a pizza. And if not, now's his chance to learn.
Just pick up the phone and call.
Yeah.
Yeah. He...
like, relationships don't require one person to be the adult and one person to be the child.
So I have a real soft spot for Daryl.
You do?
But that's a separate issue. Oh, I just think he's a style icon. And a hilarious motherfucker.
I mean, yes, okay.
So there's that.
Is it the mustache?
It's the mustache, and it's also those, like, weird terry cloth robes that he's always wearing. Mm-hmm. You know, I love a robe.
Yeah.
Well, and even at the moment when they're leaving, the fact that Thelma is taking literally all of her possessions with them on the trip.
Yeah.
Makes it almost seem in hindsight like she's not planning on coming back even at the start.
Yeah.
Like,
and also that she clears has no out idea her what drawers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she just brings everything.
Yeah.
Like, she's moving out.
Yeah, she's moving out, I think, before she even knows she's moving out.
Yeah.
She's just so unable to decide what she needs mm-hmm. that she just brings it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one line that she says later on really struck me. She said at one point, Daryl prides himself on being infantile.
And then doesn't Louise like have a rejoinder that's like, well, he's got a lot to be proud of then.
Yeah, something like that. But it's like, it seemed so rich that Thelma would call somebody else infantile.
Oh yeah, good point.
Because it's like, yeah, he is. He's the biggest baby. But also,
you're the biggest baby.
Like, just in different ways, you both need an adult in the room.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be you.
I mean, to loop back to the, like, got together at 14, they've sort of kept each other at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like, which is the case for most people who get together super young.
Yeah.
And like, you don't move past it. You don't change and grow.
Yeah. And Thelma, like, she's so used to being told what to do, whether it's from Daryl or Louise or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at one point, she sounds like a totally naive child. She says she doesn't understand why what she wants is a bad idea.
Hmm.
You know, like, yeah. I don't understand why, yeah, everything yeah. I want is a bad idea or something. And it's like, you don't? Like, yeah. It seems so clear.
Okay, let's talk about victim blaming, because okay. I have a lot of complicated feelings around Thelma.
Mm.
I genuinely, like, very strongly dislike her, and that never changes throughout the movie.
Right.
Even though she does seem to have a little bit more agency, but maybe not, I don't know. Mm. But then I also feel torn, because each of these moments is something that is, like, also so classically embedded in, like, the way that I was raised to be, like, always alert, always on your guard, yeah. always watch out for predators. Like, that sort of, like, rape culture awareness,
mm-hmm.
where it's, like, on you to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Not on others. To, like, not do bad things.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, like, where I was torn, particularly at that moment when Thelma leaves confessed thief JD in a room with her pal's life savings and expects it to be there when she gets back, and then comes back and is like, oh no, I've never been lucky ever, like, you know, just sort of like this, like, pathetic hand waving.
Mm-hmm.
I have never hated a person more than in that moment. But then I also was like, oh my god, like, no, like, she is also a victim here.
Yeah.
And, like, to expect, like, to live your life expecting other people to do terrible things,
mm-hmm.
even if they've already told you that they've done terrible things. You know, it's one of those yes. things.
And I think you're absolutely right. It's so...
So oh. we're blaming her for the fact that JD stole money.
Yeah, because she should have known better.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, totally a rape culture.
Yeah, it's argument, exactly a rape. It's a, like, the exact same thing that the cops would have done yeah. for her.
Which then assault. Kind of makes me think, okay, Thelma's character is like is geniusly written.
Yeah.
Because
oh, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, because it's just like, yeah, you don't like her. You're like, you're ruining everything.
Like, but you're also a pathetic motherfucker who's yeah. so naive, so terrible. Your innocence is damaging to everyone yes. around you.
And that's the thing, though, is she sees the best in everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that is meant to be the height of naivete.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like, she's married to an asshole and she doesn't seem to know.
Yeah.
And she's...
She goes dancing with that creep who has creep written on him in big red letters.
Yes, and like any number of people warn her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's impractical as well, right? Like, but it's just sort of like, how bad can it be? Or yeah. I want something fresh and new. So yeah, she gets all of our vitriol for just thinking everybody is a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... it's rough.
It's a real head spinner, right?
Because it's like, yeah, she... I mean, she's incorrect a lot of the time, but...
I would say 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like how... That doesn't mean we can blame her for getting assaulted or for getting robbed or, you know, she makes bad choices, but she didn't make the choice to get assaulted or to get robbed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's sort of like a holy innocent where she's sort of like walking through the world as if everyone has goodness in them.
Yeah.
And treats them that way and therefore leaves herself open to like all manner of harm.
Yeah. Like, even when she's robbing the convenience store and using JD's script, she's so charming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, well, now you're a felon.
Yeah.
and she's just, when she kind of takes over and seems to get agency, it's primarily her decision to drive off the cliff.
Yeah.
Like, she's making these choices that might not be the best choices.
Mm-hmm.
But she's still making choices.
Yeah, but are, like, yeah, I guess now, again, to loop back, like, to what extent are these choices,
mm-hmm.
and how, what are they, or versus reactions to things?
Yeah.
It's just sort of, like, emotional, sort of, like, knee-jerk responses, essentially.
Yeah, that make her feel like she has agency when maybe
exactly,
she doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Because, yeah, like, okay, so they don't drive off the cliff, then what are they gonna do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, it is like the final moment is an impossible choice because there is a wall of guns behind them and trigger happy dudes that probably will just like mow them down.
Yeah.
That seems like a very likely outcome. But on the other hand, like, yeah, it's impossible to say.
Yeah.
If they had waited 3 more seconds for Hal to run up, you know, like, it's like...
Yeah, which kind of leads me to another question is what do you make of like the foiled male attempt to rescue these women? So Jimmy tries to save them, the money.
And then betrays them
and the money gets stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And Hal literally runs after their car as they want.
Trying to grab it like as if he could hold on to
and
it.
And he's not even close.
He's not even close.
No, but as they drive off the cliff, he's like, no! And runs and like tries to tell this wall of cops not to shoot them.
Yeah.
And like he's just always trying to be the savior.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy is too. Mostly to try to get something.
Yeah.
Daryl doesn't try to save them at all. And of course
I love Daryl a little bit.
I know you do.
He's such a dirtbag. But he gets all the funniest lines.
He does, it's true.
He's like the one... Okay, so this is the other thing about this movie. It is so humorless.
Yeah.
It is... Like, I could deal with the depression, but, like, you gotta have jokes, man.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy is that one... Or Daryl, I mean, is that one ray of light in this terrible world.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's just so silly. Anyways,
what does it mean that the comic relief is also like the abusive husband?
I don't know.
Like, are we supposed to like him, or are we supposed to hate him, or are we supposed to just be like, yep, that's an abusive husband? Or like, how are we supposed to react to Daryl?
It's not clear to me.
No.
Because I was frequently looking forward to scenes where he was in them just for that pressure valve release.
Mm-hmm.
And that was troubling when I stopped to think about it, but also was just like, I just need it. And I've been thinking about that actually a bunch in other movies where I feel like they're feminist or female empowerment movies, but then the like dude ends up stealing the show a little bit. Like I had that with the Barbie movie too.
Right.
Where like, yeah. Ken was like the most interesting and compelling character.
Yeah.
And
Ken and Al had were the best.
And had the most interesting character arc.
Mm-hmm.
And the best songs.
Yeah.
So true. Like it's I don't know. it's just like a very random example, but something that's sort of been top of mind since this summer. Yeah, but like what in movies that are supposed to be about one thing, that odd shift in focus is quite interesting.
Yeah, well, and I give this movie credit in as much as it never really draws focus from Thelma and Louise.
Oh yeah, no.
Like everyone else is
Daryl is not going to steal the show like Ken stole Barbie's show. Yeah,
not at all. And that's, I mean, for a movie made in 1991, where movies about women were not common.
Yeah,
especially movies starring women that had men sort of in the background.
Yeah,
like that to me is pretty unique and pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's still, we still need Daryl to kind of ground us or you know, remind us that we're not in the car.
He's sort of like this puncture of like normal doofiness to just be like, yeah, I know we're not all on this like heroic, like, you know, death car ride.
Yeah.
Some of us are just like sitting at home in our stretchy pants, putting our foot on the pizza. Like, you know, he is he's the everyman.
Yeah. Well, and he's the man that we know that she's not going to end up with, and we're rooting for that. Like, yeah. We don't want her to end up.
Oh, he's safe in so many ways. I mean, for being an abusive fuck, he's like a safe person to enjoy because like there are no stakes attached to him in any way.
Right. Yeah.
He is essentially like set dressing after Thelma goes away. He is essentially there to just like provide a house for the cops to like crash in.
Yeah.
And that's it. But anyways, to get back to Hal, I don't know, what were your thoughts on making him this sort of like empathetic cop who somehow doesn't understand the system that he's working in?
Yeah.
Like that's what it was.
So at first I
like, he calls in the feds and then is like, "Oh no, too many feds." Like,
yeah.
What are you doing, buddy?
But just be nice to them.
Yeah, like that's not how it works.
Well, and I think his character is meant to be seen as like a good cop.
He's the good cop.
He's the good cop. Even though now it's like,
yeah, well,
another
myth.
You're not good at your job. But
this is the thing. He's not good at his job, and he's not effective at his job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not a good person.
Yeah, but he is at least able to maybe show that that people who have committed crimes are still human beings worthy of being treated like human beings.
Easy there.
I know. It's a wild concept that we are not used to seeing in our society. But like he does humanize them, even as he's kind of using misogyny to get there.
Yeah. Oh, and fully, like, that one point in their final, him and Louise's final phone conversation, he's privy to at least some of her trauma.
Yeah.
And he uses that as sort of like a way of like trying to manipulate her.
Yeah.
Like he explicitly says, "I know why you're running. I know what happened in Texas."
Right.
And then Thelma hangs up the phone for Louise. Like, so Louise doesn't even get to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like even the like moments like that where it's sort of this like faux empathy that's then used as sort of a hook to like drag them in somehow.
Yeah, well, and like I have to wonder, like, does he know what happened in Texas because he knows what happened to her?
Mm.
Or does he know what she did?
Yes.
Because
excellent distinction.
They're two different things, and he seemed to pull up her record at some point.
Yeah.
And she did not change her name. So not victim blaming, but I would have probably changed my name.
We are the worst. We were. Like, well, if I was on the run.
First thing I would do, change my name. No shade.
No shade to Louise, but I'd do it better.
I wouldn't even know what to do or how to do it. But yeah, like he's, I think in part too, he's trying to be empathetic when really he's just bringing up something she doesn't want to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you haven't, you need to you earn those that. Conversations. Like even yeah. Thelma hasn't earned that conversation. Like that's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of blew my mind.
I think also that like we are more inclined to see Hal in a positive light because there are so many other more terrible people in this movie.
Yeah.
Like we are really at a loss for any kind of goodness. Like, ooh, I would say that Louise yeah. is sort of, like, the moral core of this movie.
Yeah.
And, like I said, Thelma is, like, a chaotic baby who even knows what's going on in her brain. And then, like, just, like, everyone else is terrible. So, yeah. So there's really, like in trying to find sort of, like, a moment of connection with any character at all, like, where, you know, like, who, where...
Yeah, it's yeah.
impossible.
Yeah.
So then, like, by definition then, Hal is going to show up in a bit more of a positive light because, you know, he's the least bad of a bad bunch.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like it. I just wanted to quickly talk about how this movie follows sort of, like, parable or, like, dream logic.
Ooh.
It doesn't follow sort of, like, realistic logic, even though it looks like a gritty sort of like almost like Western kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it mostly came out for me in sort of the rule of threes.
Oh.
The three encounters that kept happening. Yeah. So in particular, the three times that Thelma and Louise meet JD.
Right.
So the first time they just like meet him, go on their way, and then they meet him again magically, and then he shows up again at the motel after they've sort of gone their separate ways, and that's sort of the final time. And then the three times that they also encounter the gross trucker.
Right.
So there's like the initial encounter where they're like, oh gross, ew, ew, ew. And then the second time they're like, just ignore, don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third time is the time where they're like, we're gonna take matters into our own hands.
Yeah.
And I feel like, so those for sure are like, for sure, for sure. But I feel like there's also three times that Thelma and Louise talk to Hal on the phone.
Yeah, that makes
sense. I am pretty sure.
That would track with me.
Yeah. So that's a little bit, maybe not, but it feels right. We're all about feelings here, not about facts.
Yeah.
So even just using those, like, sort of, like, the sort of, like, magical recurrence of encountering that gross trucker
mm-hmm.
so often. And they're just, like, they keep passing him. How does he keep, like, and it's just sort of, like, they're running parallel or, like, continuing to encounter each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or sort of, like, the magical reality of how JD somehow manages to get up ahead the road of them.
Yeah.
Even though he literally, like, they literally just left him.
Yeah, and Jimmy, too. How Jimmy gets, like, ahead of them.
That's but, right. Yeah. I mean, Louise did tell Jimmy where to wire the money.
That's true.
So he knew where to they were going to end up, and then he just waited for them. But
I guess.
Yeah. So, and then how always the two women are, like, driving through the desert. And then whenever they're near, like, water or pools, they're always sort of, like, driving away from them. They never go into them.
Mm.
And the men are always pictured in, like, downpours or wet, damp, sweaty. Like, they're sort of, like, visible water on, like, on their bodies.
Right.
And the women are always, like, dry, dusty, sweaty. So I wasn't sure what to do with that. But it sort of added to this sort of, like, visual sort of like dream delineation of like their dusty orange sort of drained of color and then this sort of like dark blue tone saturated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely noticed like the cool tones and the high contrast in the, you know, in Daryl's house, for example, and with the police around and and the warm tones around the women, but I totally didn't catch the dry versus wet. Because it does seem like
they're standing in downpours all the time and they're walking through. Yeah.
And for Thelma and Louise, like they are by the end of the movie, like wrung out. Yeah. Like they have nothing left.
Sinew.
Yeah. Like they've been kind of used up and used up and used up by the system and by whoever else in their lives.
Yeah.
And so yeah. Like it's now I kind of want to see if there's something elemental about it in terms of like like driving off the cliff is like flying too. Like they're
the air. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Something for the next journal article.
Something for the next journal article.
There you go. You're doing a pivot.
Yeah. Putting a pin in classical Hollywood.
That's right. Yeah. Take a break. did you have anything else you wanted to talk about before we move on?
I don't think so.
Oh, I have one other thing I just want to quickly mention.
Oh, do so.
Okay. So this is a very white movie. Extremely white. To the point where I think there is only, I mean, there might be one black cop that we see just like in sort of like that chase montage at the end.
Right.
But there's, so after Thelma and Louise have locked that highway cop in his trunk and have driven off.
Yeah.
There's sort of a scene that cuts back to the car with the cop still in it. And a black man is like on, like he's like decked out in cycling gear.
Yeah.
Super neon, like spandex, just vibing and smoking, like at the same time. just kidding, everyone's smoking. Even while cycling in the desert. And it was just, I don't know, I'm not quite sure what to do with it because it's such a brief moment. So the cyclist sort of comes near the car and is listening to music on headphones, so can't necessarily hear all the banging. And then when he is aware of like the banging in the trunk, and the cop sort of points his finger out and is like, the keys are over there.
Yeah.
The cyclist like blows smoke into the hole.
Well, and is it like, it's like a huge joint, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a mess.
So it's like blowing, marijuana smoke in the hole.
Yeah.
Which is an extra sort of like,
fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to like register that as like a really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And kind
tables
of.
Tables have turned.
Well, yes. Like, I mean, this is undoubtedly like a very dangerous like thing for this black dude to be cycling in this wide open space that is like regularly patrolled by white cops
and also the middle of the desert
like there's so many layers of like sort of like nature and white supremacy sort of like working against this person. And they're also like physically alone in the movie.
Yeah.
As like the only significant black body we see. And they're also so much more visually demarcated. Like no one wears neon. This is like the late 80s, early 90s. No one's wearing neon except for this dude.
And he's so joyful.
And he's so like, he's just absolutely like, he's like having a great day.
Yeah.
And minding his own business until he like gets to like kind of fuck over a cop. But then like, even that's great.
Yeah, he's having a good time.
He's having a great time. And I just, yeah, wanted to think about ways in which this is sort of presented as an alternative to Thelma and Louise's journey.
Ooh.
This like tiny, tiny, minuscule little window into sort of like an alternate story to theirs. Fully out of context, but just as sort of like this moment where there's sort of like joyful subversion happening in a way that isn't nearly as sort of like, I don't know, demonstrative or overblown as what Thelma and Louise are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or in a way that's even harming others. Like Thelma and Louise, like, steal from a small business.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're, like, there's a lot of, like, collateral damage even in them trying to, like, do what they're doing. I don't know. It's not very fully thought out, but I just wanted to, like, mull on that moment for a little bit.
Yeah,
because it is, like, a beautiful little unique gem sort of tucked in all of this other noise as white people sort of chase each other around.
Yeah.
And it also happens in the desert, so we're positioning this as, like, with, like, sort of the, like, the Badland rocky formation things, you know, around them. So we're already positioned to think of the desert as a place of, like, lawlessness or a place where, you know, power dynamics are in flux at the very least. So this is where Thelma and Louise go for safety or at least escape, potentially. But then there are, like, other bodies who are also sort of, like, not tidily fitting in within the bounds of the law.
Yeah.
Who are also exploring this space. And yeah, this is another example of one of those bodies.
Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. And how, yeah, the law is ineffectual in that space, even though they are present and in full force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that.
Oh, thanks. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
One other thing.
I also just wanted to give a shout out to cyclists everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
y'all keeping it real.
One other thing that I forgot to mention.
Cyclist representation in a car movie. Fuck yeah. Sorry, I'll shut up now.
And it's sort of in defense of Thelma.
Oh!
Is that when she and JD are having their fun sexy times.
Yeah.
They are kind of like standing face to face, holding hands. And he takes off her wedding ring.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a reverse wedding. And they start jumping on the bed and playing games. And it's like he's giving her that childishness without, like, he's sort of the anti-Daryl at that point.
Oh.
Which is maybe why she's so excited by him and trusts him. It's almost like he's undoing Daryl.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Or he's what Daryl, again, like, sort of another window into, like, what could have been, or, like, an alternate reality of, like, them at 14. Like, this is them as teenagers or whatever back again, right?
And as Louise is like, getting back into, you know, being a kid or being a teenager, we see in a subsequent scene Louise, like, toss her lipstick out of the car. So it's almost like she's done with all of this.
Yeah.
You know, surface stuff.
Yeah.
And Thelma is finally kind of growing up or figuring out who she is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that reading a lot. That is, oh man, I, yeah, would just love, like, any little tidbits that make me feel, you know, a little bit more attached to Thelma. Because I do feel bad about dunking on her. Even though I, like, you know, ugh. She's such a pain. She's like an irritating younger sibling.
I was gonna say, I think we feel that way because we're eldest siblings.
Yes,
and
probably.
We see her and we're like, what are you doing? You're making my life so much harder.
Yeah, there's a real, like Louise as oldest, at Thelma as youngest vibes happening here.
For sure.
It's like, you're getting in trouble, I have to get you out of it, and I have to carry the responsibility of, like, consequences, too.
Yeah.
Siblings.
It all comes down to eldest sibling
terrible
trauma.
Shall we move on to theme corner and talk a little bit more about how this movie fits into the road category of film?
Let's do it.
As quest, maybe, also?
Yeah.
So what do you think, now that we've had a fulsome discussion?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, yeah, there is a quest at the end of this movie. It's just maybe an unconventional one. They're looking for a life without fetters. They just want to be free of all of the stuff that they're kind of running from.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are. It's not just a fishing vacation. It's an escape of sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but also they're, you know, and this is where the nihilism comes in. Like, they seem very quickly, like, sort of resigned to the fact that they're going to die.
Yeah.
And so this end goal that keeps sort of shifting then also becomes this sort of, like, weirdly permanent solution to their problems. And they're so blasé about it.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about death or sort of like the end of this all as just like, oh, you know, like another errand that we're going to run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not that I want to jump into Freud because boo, but there was sort of like a little like idea bouncing in my head about like maybe connecting the death drive to this.
Oh yeah.
Somehow, mostly because it has the word drive in it. So. Sure.
This movie could have been called Death Drive.
Death Drive, it should have been called Death Drive. yeah, I feel like that's going to be the third movie in the Ghost Rider series.
Oh, man.
Death Drive, Bring Ghost Rider, on. Colon, Death Drive.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage, call me. I know you're obsessed. I know you want to make more. Yeah, I don't... So this movie starts out as, like, a simple getaway. They're going to go to the cabin. They're going to come home.
Mm-hmm.
But, like we said, there's already sort of, like, weirdness embedded in that where, like, Thelma's taking too much stuff. Louise seems to be taking almost nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's already sort of, like, this really strong imbalance of intent and preparation.
Yeah, well, and even the destination, like, they're only going to the cabin because Louise's boss is losing it in a divorce.
Yeah.
And kind of wants as many people to just sort of
trash the place. Yeah,
have a great time in it.
Yeah.
As possible. So even then, she's kind of beholden to somebody who is trying to screw over
mm-hmm.
his wife. His ex-wife. Yeah.
So it isn't even like they're going because they want to go. It's just like they're going because it's a thing to do.
Yeah, it's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, don't think too hard about it.
Yeah. And then they have that stopover at the roadhouse. And then sort of like everything is upended and their goals change and now they're on the run. Trying to figure out a new plan. Trying to get to safety. And it seems like there is, I mean, as little of a goal as there was before. The new goal is to just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Permanently.
Yeah. So can we kind of see this movie and The Green Knight as having that similar... Like, is there honor in what Thelma and Louise are doing when they drive off that cliff? The Green Knight is also, you know, going towards his death and trying to find shelter and safety. And he's going in all these windy ways.
Oh, my God.
But he's doing it knowing that even if he loses his head, at least he'll have some sort of legacy.
Yeah.
Like, is that the same for Thelma and Louise, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure because... They, again, like, are so siloed and, like, no one knows who they are except for, like, literally their shitty partners and a bunch of cops.
Yeah.
So there is no sort of, like, larger... I think the difference with The Green Knight is that there's this larger community accountability.
Yeah.
And and this sort of sphere in which the story is told. And so there is like a space for honor to be created and shared. Whereas in this one, like once they go over the, like, yeah, it's like a fully, it's like a full stop. It's an end.
So maybe Thelma and Louise's quest is like Gawain's in The Green Knight when we see the sort of imaginary alternative of him going back and not getting that honor and kind of just dying in obscurity with no air and nothing. Like, it's all in vain.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want the consequence that's in front of him.
Yeah.
Even though he knows that's the natural conclusion. Yes.
Yes, this is the thing. So not to, like, be too, like, boring moral about it, but, like, I kind of do feel like, while this is, like, a very perfect end to the movie, it is also, on some level, disappointing to me, because we don't get that richness and complexity of the consequences and the fallout. I mean, like, there is a fallout. They die. they fall out of the sky. But
yes.
But yeah, I think the thing that I keep running up against in Thelma and Louise is that there's all these like arbitrary, like, false binaries.
Yeah.
And so we're presented with these options that seem like the only two options when there are, like, loads of other options.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like, yeah, that's the impulse I keep resisting in thinking about this. It's like, surely there's, like, you know, option C that they can figure out.
How very non-binary of
you. I know. non-binary bisexual.
Yeah.
Like, you can do all the things.
But I think you're right. Like, there's always another option, right? No matter what, like, in The Green Knight, too, there's got to be another option. Mm-hmm. There's always something.
And The Green Knight also leaves it open-ended that, like, yes. Yeah, no, he has, like, which made a choice, tough. And then there's, like, that sort of space, and we don't know what happens after that.
Because there's another party with agency who is mm-hmm. able to make a choice. And same in Thelma and Louise. There's another party with agency who can make a choice.
Yeah.
And they just assume that that choice will be bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
Which probably will, but, like, so's dying.
Yeah, like, so you're choosing, like, certain death against possible death? Like, yeah. That's another, like, we...
Although, like, if faced with, like, life in prison and the death penalty, I might want to, you know, drive off a cliff, too. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm very cautious of particularly narratives about, like, white heroes that are dying in glory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of, like, mm-hmm. we're going out on our own terms to make a point.
They're not, though.
Which is, like, you know, you're never making... No, like...
these are not your terms. Your terms were to go to Mexico and yeah. live a great life.
Well, this is the, like, thing.
Yeah.
Also, and maybe this is just, like, opening up a whole different can of worms, but have you ever read the short story, The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelus?
Yes.
Okay, so, great short story.
Yeah.
But then there was a counter to that by, I think, N.K. Jemisin wrote it.
Oh.
That was sort of like a response story.
Yes, yes.
And it's
yes.
essentially The Ones Who Stay or whatever. And her point being that, like, it is a level of privilege that you get to, like, take this moral stance and walk away from something that you disagree with. When so many other people are implicated in the system and have no privilege to walk away from it and are embroiled in, you know, like, there are many other layers to this. But yeah. but just sort of pointing out that, like, in grandstanding and making this sort of one moment your identity, there's, like, huge amounts of privilege to that, essentially.
Sure.
So I think about that a lot then in looking at narratives like this, where it's like, yeah. Oh, okay, making a big statement for whom?
Well, yeah, and like we can only imagine if it hadn't been two white ladies in the car, like they wouldn't have hesitated to just blow that car up.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, just sort of things that are bopping around in my head.
Mm. Useful stuff.
Yeah. Should we move on to moments of joy?
Oh, sure.
What were your moments of joy?
I had a couple.
This dour ass movie.
Yeah. So one of them involved Daryl. And it's when.
Yeah, my boy Daryl.
It's when they're like, okay, when Thelma calls, you have to act like everything's great. And so he usually answers the phone and just like balls her out for something.
Oh, this wasn't even mine, but I love this.
And he picks up the phone. He's like, hello, Thelma, how are you? Or something like that. And it's so disingenuous that immediately she hangs up because it's like, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Because
he's being nice.
Yeah. It's like he is in a child school play. Like he is bad at being nice. So that brought me a lot of joy. And the second thing was just Harvey Keitel with that accent. Like, I was just like, what is he trying to prove? Like, everybody knows that's not his accent. He's a great actor, but that's not him.
No.
No.
That's great. I love that. So, no surprise, my moments of joy were all about Daryl. So, I think the only moment in the movie that I, like, laughed out loud for pure delight was in one of the opening scenes when he's going to work and he walks towards his car and slips on a whole bunch of boards next to his car.
Yes.
And it's this beautiful pratfall. It's so amazing and so funny. I just like, it was just like, oh,
do you want to know a fun fact?
Yeah. What?
The actor actually fell down and they just kept rolling.
Oh, that was real.
Ridley Scott was like, yes, awesome, perfect. So yeah, it was totally real. And then the actor just went with it.
Oh, and his response afterwards is also just perfect. Because he's like, damn it, Homer, I gotta get to work. I don't need this bullshit.
Yeah. It's and like the most real part of the whole movie.
It gave me life.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And then another beautiful Daryl moment was when Hal is first of all telling him, like, you know, as you know, we've tapped your phone in case Thelma calls in, and Daryl looks at him and is like, okay, is this gonna cost me? He's just at every moment it's just like,
he's like, what a bastard.
Oh my god, you're worried about the phone bill. Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, and when he steps in his pizza.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Hal's like, you stepped in your pizza,
buddy. And then just, like, a very quick throwaway moment when Thelma and Louise first encounter JD at that gas station in the middle of nowhere. And in the background, there's this, like, super jacked dude just, like, pumping iron.
Well, it was the early 90s. Everybody was doing it.
It was just a delight. Because you see all these, like, tiny little wiry, like, you know, yeah, sun dehydrated people. And then there's, like, this giant dude in the background. Like, gotta get those gains. Oh, man. Movie connections. Did you have any?
Yeah. So the first one I had was in the diner scene when Thelma comes in and shows Louise her hickeys, and then just kind of freaks out in the booth. Mm-hmm. Immediately, my mind went to When Harry Met Sally.
Nice. Yeah.
Because Sally, I mean, that scene is just so iconic. So I couldn't help but think that was some inspo.
Mm-hmm.
The other movie connection I had was somehow toward the end, inexplicably, all the police are watching Penny Serenade. With Cary Grant and Irene Dunne.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, and it's so weird because everybody just wants to keep watching it.
Uh-huh.
But it's a movie, the tagline of, or the description that IMDb gives is, a couple's big dreams give way to a life full of unexpected sadness and unexpected joy.
Oh, which is like, yeah, interesting. That's
what happens in Thelma and Louise. So these cops are just wrapped with this story, and meanwhile, like, it's happening.
Oh, that reminds me of how in the apartment movie,
yeah,
the Jack Lemmon character is watching Grand Hotel,
yeah,
which is about a woman who gets together with a dude because she doesn't have any other options, essentially.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, whoa, meta moment. Yes. I love a meta movie moment.
Oh, me too.
That's great. So I had North by Northwest.
Oh.
Because of, I mean, first of all, the sort of like crop duster plane.
Oh, yes.
Moment.
Sure. Yeah.
But then that also got me thinking more broadly about like, movies of male paranoia and conspiracy theory, and how those are often cloaked in like mystery and grandeur, while women paranoia or, you know, conspiracy are so much smaller,
yeah,
and tighter focused. Because in a sense, this is a very small movie with a very small cast of characters. Mm-hmm. It's got just like sort of like our two mains and then sort of like three supportings.
Yeah.
And there really aren't almost any other speaking roles aside from those folks. Like, there's sort of people around, but yeah, it's very tightly focused. Yeah, so that got me thinking then. And then I was also thinking about, you know, Freaky Friday, Persona, those sorts of movies where, you know, like, women blend and mesh.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's that one moment when they're driving, again, through the desert at night. And their faces are overlaid. Mm. They keep switching.
Yeah. Well, and when they take that cop hostage, uh-huh, all of a sudden Thelma's in charge and Louise shoots the wrong radio. And Thelma's like, no, the police radio.
Yeah.
Whereas like that would never, Louise would never make that mistake.
No.
So yeah, there's that. Yeah.
So yeah, then I was like, oh man, like what's going on with women taking on each other's personalities? What's happening there? Anyway.
Just trying them on.
Just trying them on to see how they fit.
Don't like our own.
Oh, boy. Yeesh. quick pivot. What did we learn? Juiciest bits, juiciest butts.
Oh, man. Well, I feel like a good butt was hard to find in this movie, except for Brad Pitt's butt, maybe, but...
Did we even see his butt, though?
Not really.
He was, I mean, you know... For being fresh-faced and youthful, yeah, like, very, again, very sinewy.
Yeah.
Like we really loved a sinewy body in the 90s, you know?
Yes, yeah. It's true. But, like, yeah, like, Gina Davis, no butt. Susan Sarandon, no definitely butt. No butt.
No curves at all. Harvey Keitel? Is that our best option?
No. Oh, I mean...
Please, God, no.
I mean, the back of the car is probably the best butt.
Mm, a good butt, a good butt. Mm. Well, I'm, you know what? I think I'm going to have to take a pass on this one.
Yeah, yeah.
First pass in however many episodes. Yeah, I can't feel strongly about anyone's butt. No. Which is
nothing is jumping to mind.
A real sad state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
What did we learn?
Oh, so many things. Like... Yeah, expect to get robbed, I guess. always think the best of people.
And always prepare for the worst.
And always prepare for the worst. Yes.
Oh my god. Although, you will notice, at one point, when they're at the roadhouse still, before shit goes down, both Thelma and Louise leave their drinks unattended at their table.
I did notice that!
And no shenanigans happen there.
Yeah, that's how you know it's like early 90s.
Oh, yeah. 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 So. No,
also, I learned it is probably best to be the one guarding purses at the bar.
As opposed to the one getting assaulted? Yeah, yeah. Definitely. For sure.
Yeah. Then you can just leave when you want to and avoid murdering someone.
Again, with the false binaries, I don't think those are the only two options.
No.
But then surely
also
there
you don't
others.
Have to line dance if you do that.
Oh, but I love line dancing.
You do?
It's so goofy. Of course you do. It's so goofy and fun. You get to do it in a group. Come on.
I don't like doing things in groups.
Cool kids do things in groups.
I'm not cool.
You get to wear dope boots. You get to clatter around. You get to stomp and clap.
What did you learn?
I learned you don't like line dancing.
Yes, alas, we will never go line dancing together.
Boo.
Well, that's not true.
Incidentally.
If anyone could get me to go line dancing,
what do I gotta do to get you?
Yeah, it would be you. So.
Oh, I'm now gonna Google line dancing and see where we can go this weekend.
I'd have to rent boots.
Well, of course you would. I don't have boots. No, you can't show up in sneakers. Come on. Unbelievable. No, I would say when you go on a trip, first of all, maybe don't bring as many things as you think you'll need.
Oh, that's a good, that's
because like advice. They had a whole trunk full of stuff that they didn't use ever.
Do not pack.
That's just waste.
We all pack extra underwear thinking we're gonna shit ourselves at least twice a day. So no need.
You're only gonna probably shit yourself once. So yeah.
Max. You
know, take that extra undies out.
And most places have laundry machines.
And the fishing net. You don't need the fishing net. Take that out too.
Yeah.
Surely wherever you're going will have fishing nets if you need them. Mm-hmm. Seems like a cabin thing that supplies itself.
Yeah.
You don't need to bring your own.
I agree.
Yeah, and then I would also say, you know, don't smoke indoors, folks.
Yeah.
Because
Or at all.
But like, you know, those breakfast dinners probably reeked.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. Just you know, be cautious. Don't do it.
It's true. You're too young to remember what cigarette smoke coffee tastes like.
Oh, I am too young to remember. It sounds heinous.
I mean, to be clear, I only know because my grandma used to smoke and drink coffee all day.
Okay.
And it permeated everything. But
she sounds like a badass bitch.
She was. Yeah. Yeah. R.I.P.
Oh, man. All right. Well, on that note. In memoria to your grandmother.
Thank you. She liked this movie.
That's great.
Yeah. I think. I'm pretty sure she did.
Okay. Did you watch it with her?
Because
you watched all manner of things with her.
Yeah. I probably watched it with her.
Oh my god.
When I was...
So baby Mandy?
Yeah.
5-year-old Mandy with grandma?
Yeah.
Watching two ladies drive over a cliff.
Probably why I thought it was a comedy.
This has been fun.
This has been fun.
Let's do it again, maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. Maybe.
Maybe in 2 weeks. Who can say?
Who can say?
All right. Well, for the juiciest bits, I have been Charlie.
And I've been Mandy.
See ya.
Bye.